Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford, and I'll be taking your calls and answering your questions for the next hour or so. Lisa is here with us, screening calls and keeping things light and fun. If you want to join in, simply press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will be right with you. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. Sit back, relax, and listen, or jump in and ask your question. You can even bring us your opinion. It's up to you. This is your show. You can ask questions about fuel mileage, tires, engine, EGR, aerodynamics, truck specking, maintenance, taxes, financial planning, getting started as an owner-operator, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the audio road.
Hi, this is Lisa. Remember, to talk to Kevin, press 1 so I can pick up the phone and screen your call. You know you'd rather talk to me anyway. Or just sit back, relax, and listen to the show. And at any time you have a question, just hit 1 and I'll pick up the phone.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. Lisa is here screening your calls. If you're listening online, you may want to jump in quickly and dial us up on the phone. The lines are starting to fill up. The number to dial, 347-884-8327. Once you're on that call, just press 1. You'll talk to Lisa first. She'll screen your call and she'll get you over to me. I'll do my best to answer your question. I want to do some updates on what's going on with freight and rates and the market overall, and then we'll jump right in and get to your question. So if you've got a question, a comment, a topic, whatever it might be, jump in, press 1 on the phone, and let's get this thing started. The rates looking pretty good again this week. Let's start off with Internet Truck Stop. The market demand index, we kind of found the bottom a couple weeks ago, and it looks like we're on an upward trend. Actually had a really good week. The market demand index is up 9%, right at 8. It was 7.34 the week percent. Now, or the week before. Now, remember, the market demand index measures available freight against available trucks. So the index, the higher it goes, the better it is for us, the people with the trucks. That can happen two ways. The index can go up because there's more freight, or it can go up because there are less trucks, or both can happen. And I really like to see it go up because there's more freight, but I'm happy either way. And last week, freight was up by 8%, and trucks were really flat. Truck availability was up 0.06%, not even enough to really measure. So the index is up because there was an 8% boost in load availability. That's a good thing. The rates over at the Internet Truck Stop, kind of flat. Nothing really moving at all. The only thing that was up, specialized was up 5% to $2.14. Everything else was about flat, so that puts the average at $1.85, van rates at $1.61, flatbed rates at $1.71, reefer rates at $1.96. That's all pretty much the same as last week. Fuel prices were down 3 cents. That's always a bad thing. I wish we could break that $3 mark. In fact, I wish we could get maybe to about $3.50 and hang out there for a while. Not enough to really stall the economic growth, but enough to get that fuel surcharge up a little bit. So we're at $2.94 for last week. Let's see what they're expecting to happen over there. Looks like they're predicting at the Internet Truck Stop that the demand should continue to grow this week. We've got the holiday weekend coming up. That always kind of screws things up. You never really know which way it's going to move. So we'll keep an eye on that. Over at TransCore, let's see what's going on over there. The trends this week, load availability was up about 2% at TransCore. Equipment capacity was down 8%. Normally, these two track pretty close. That's a fairly big difference. Not, you know, it's hard to say why, but normally they track a little closer than that. So freight is up here. Equipment capacity was down more, less trucks being posted on TransCore. Spot availability in August so far, tracking pretty close to July. It looks like we're off just a little bit. Let's go through some of the numbers. Spot market load index for the week. The nice thing about TransCore is we can break everything down week over week, month over month, and year over year in a pretty quick snapshot. So spot market load availability week over week was up 1.4%. July over June was down about 12%. Year over year up 128%. So according to all those, August trends are actually looking pretty good. Truck index week over week was down 8%. Dry van load to truck ratio up 7% on the week. That's a good thing. Flatbed load to truck ratio up 12%. Reefer load to truck ratio up 12%. Let's take a look at what's going on with rates over at TransCore. The dry van rate for the week, just about flat. The spot market is off 1%, and the contract is off less than 1%, 0.7%. Remember, spot market rates are the kind of rates that we talk about here on the two big load boards. Those are loads that are posted and move off of the load board. Contract freight is the other stuff, the stuff that doesn't go to brokers, doesn't go to the load boards, but it's all contracted ahead of time, either contracted directly from a shipper to a carrier for a long period, or from a shipper to a broker to a carrier for a long period, or from a shipper to a broker for a long period. So those rates are just about flat. Year over year, spot market is actually up almost 20%, and contract is only up 3%. Let's check out the reefer rates. Spot market for the month is actually off a little bit. It's off 4.4%. Contract rate about flat, 0.7% up, not too bad. And really, even year over year, the reefer rates haven't changed that much. They're both up 2 to 3% year over year. Let's try flatbed. Month over month, flatbed rates are actually off a little bit. Spot market flatbed rates down 3%. Contract flatbed rates down 0.5%. Year over year, though, they're looking pretty good. Spot market up 13%. Contract up 7%. There are a couple other things I want to throw out there, and then we're going to get right to your call. And that's kind of a theme that I've been on this week. That's because of what I've been reading in the news. And those are the two articles. I'm just going to throw them out. If you've got questions about them, I'd certainly like to talk to you, but I see we're getting a lot of questions already, so I'm going to jump right into those. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this unless somebody wants to talk about it. These are the two things I brought up last week. One of them is the bill that OIDA is backing, and I was just trying to figure out why they would back a bill like this, but it ties into the fair tax because it's just one more example of how our tax code is being manipulated by special interests in our government to reward some people, punish other people, and ultimately control our behavior. And we know that that happens in the tax code. It's why I want to see the fair tax, so that doesn't happen anymore. What I was surprised about, though, was the way that OIDA was backing this bill, because I couldn't figure out how it could possibly help their members. And basically what it is a 10% tax credit for all 2010 emission compliant trucks. So if you buy a 2010 emission compliant truck, let's say it's going to be $130,000, which seems to be about the price of the new emissions. That means you would get a tax credit of $13,000. Now, on the surface, that might sound like a good thing and something they should be backing. But let's think about it. The government doesn't have any money. That's our tax money they're handing out to other people. Now, who are they going to be handing it out to, and who is this going to benefit? Not the individual owner-operator. It's going to benefit a fleet. If a fleet buys 1,000 trucks, which they would have bought anyway, if this bill passes, they're going to get $13 million of our money. That comes out of our tax money, goes to that fleet, $13 million. That's just on 1,000 trucks. I mean, that's not a big deal for fleets. They have to buy that many trucks. Think about Swift, who has, what, I don't know, 15, 18, 20,000 trucks on the road. Think about how many they could buy and what their tax credit would be, and they have to buy them anyway. J.B. Hunt, Schneider, we could go on and on. That's a lot of our money being handed out to the fleets. Why would the who do I to be behind this? I never really got a good answer from anybody. And then there was another lawsuit that FedEx, they announced FedEx won the lawsuit, and it was over the whole independent contractor employee issue, and they've been fighting this over and over and over. I think somebody estimated somewhere that I saw there are 200 active lawsuits with just FedEx alone over this issue. Now, they keep winning them, which is good. I'm glad they're winning them. But you know what? That's my money. I'm a FedEx contractor. That's my money they have to spend on attorneys and lawsuits over this stupid issue. How many times are they going to have to win this? So both of those really tie into the fair tax. Two huge issues that affect us owner-operators in this industry and are directly related to taxes and something the fair tax could fix. All right, that's enough for me. I'm going to get to some phone calls. If you are listening online and you want to join us, a couple lines open, not many, 347-884-8327. Once you're on that call, press 1, and we will get right to your phone call. Coming up in 30 seconds, we'll be going to Rico in Georgia. Hold on for a quick break.
Over-the-road performance means money. That's why you should be running with a Fleet Air filter, the washable filter for big rigs. Fleet Air uses the latest in foam filter technology, which means it captures more dirt and debris while increasing the flow of air by 30%, and that translates into better fuel mileage. Plus, it's washable. Simply place it back in your truck's canister and you're good to go. Fleet Air Filters out of Theodore, Alabama. Call us at 251-654-0982. That's 251-654-0892.
All right. We are getting right to it. Let's go to Georgia. Rico, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, Kevin?
Doing good. What's on your mind?
Just had a quick question. Man, you got me thinking about those rates. But the question I really called in for was I noticed that a couple of people were talking about the ISX engines and how you can turn off the EGR on the ISX engine. And if someone was in the market for a new truck, like some of these fleets won't let you get the 03s or the pre-EGR engines, would that be a smart move to buy to pursue the Cummins engines because you can circumvent the EGR on those engines?
Yeah, and we've got a lot of people working on a lot of different ideas on different engines, but the Cummins was certainly the first one we were able to do that with and the easiest. So if I had to buy one of those, although they're having pretty good luck on the Volvo engine and the Mercedes as well, it's a different fix. So that's certainly a factor I would be thinking about.
Okay. And as far as, I wanted to tell you, I thank you for doing the webinar that you did. I got a chance to catch a replay of one on Overdrive Magazine or the website.
Oh, yeah.
And
okay.
And it really, I'm planning on ordering your course of action, your plan of action DVD on buying a truck. But I'm in the market right now. I'm trying to get doing all my homework and everything to get prepared to try and come into the industry as an owner-operator. Maybe, probably, what would you suggest? Would it be a good idea to wait until maybe March of next year to get all my homework and stuff done? I mean, I've got everything as far as money-wise. I got everything lined up now. But would it probably be wise just to ride out the rest of this year and wait until March until things pick back up? Or what would be your advice?
You know, freight is right now, freight is about as good as we've seen it. I mean, it's a little off from our highs this year. Typically, if we follow our pattern, fourth quarter should be strong. I mean, in a normal year, fourth quarter is the strongest time of year for overall freight. So freight is there right now. Rates are good. Freight's strong. If you've got the money, I wouldn't say there's any reason to hold off until March other than your own comfort level. I mean, if for some reason you're not feeling comfortable, then I certainly wouldn't want to see a rush. But I'll tell you what will help you decide this is the DVD. I mean, if you get the DVD and watch it, that's going to give you a plan that you can start putting on paper. And one way or another, then you'll know. You'll either put the plan down and go, hey, you know what, I think I'm ready. I think I could pull the trigger before the end of this year and kind of catch that freight as we're heading out. Or you might say after you watch it and you put the plan down, you might say, you know what, I think I will wait, kind of keep an eye on things. But it's going to make you feel more comfortable one way or the other.
Well, you already taught me how to get my own authority. So.
Well, good. I'm glad because I'm glad. That's not a good way to start. And I'll tell you, you know, you mentioned the Overdrive webinar. I've got another one coming up this month. I should know the date, and I can look it up here real quick.
September 29th or something later on this month.
That sounds
Because of my workout, I won't be able to catch it. Yeah, because my workout, I'll have to catch it on the replay again. They replay it. They save all of those, right?
Yeah, that's the great thing about the webinar. Once you go to the website, you can watch it whenever you want.
Yeah, that's excellent. It's kind of like these phone calls that you're doing right now. Well, I'm going to get off, Kevin, let somebody else get on. But I want to just, you know, like I said, continue to thank you for doing all that you do for us out here.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. And, yeah, that webinar is on load selection. And that is with Overdrive, and I'll put, I think I've already got the details up on the website. If I don't, I'll get it up there. Check that out. Let's see. We are off to Illinois this time. Victor, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, how are you?
Doing good. What can I help you with tonight?
I called you a couple weeks ago. I'm trying to find a team running out of New York to Kansas City. And I've advertised and done everything you said. And I had a website called Careers and Gears call me I think it's kind of like where you fill out an application looking for a job and then they try to match you up with employers. I just wondered if you had anybody might have any luck with them or knew anything about them, whether it was worth, you know, the effort or not. They're not that expensive compared to what I paid for newspaper advertising. And I just wondered if anybody knew anything about it.
You know, that one doesn't sound familiar. There are a bunch of them, though. And, you know, they take the shotgun approach, and they all do, and there's nothing wrong with that. It is kind of a national, level. So I don't know how effective it is for somebody like you and I looking for one or two drivers occasionally. What you'll find is they are absolutely overrun with fleets that, you know, fleets with big recruiting budgets will just put their stuff out everywhere, and they kind of blanket the market, and it makes it a little tougher for the little guys to get through. Have you been to their website to check it out?
No, I hadn't. I just talked to them today,
Here's the way I like to approach this. When I'm looking as a potential employer that's thinking about running an ad on something like this, one of the things I would do is come at it from the other side. Pretend you're a driver looking for a job and go check out that website and see if it would be even possible to find your ad there. Or on the other hand, when you sign up as a driver, Watch what happens to your email inbox. And again, remember, you're going to go in and pretend you're a driver looking for a job, so you're going to go in and fill out their application, however their system works. Everybody's a little different. And you may find that you get so flooded with emails, or not. You may find that their website does work really well, and somebody may be able to find you on there. But anytime I would consider any of these services, before I gave them a penny, I would go through it from the other side as a driver and see how it works.
Well, the lady called me. She told me, she gave me, you know, the address, and she said, you try it any way you want to. She said, we've got right now 280,000 applicants from all over the country, and she looked at it and said it's somewhere probably around 150,000 between Philadelphia and say Kansas City or Wichita, you know, in that I-70 corridor, and I don't know if that's, you know, I don't know how you verify what they're saying. That's the thing, you know, they can tell you anything and make you believe it. But
yeah, and here's the other thing, that quantity doesn't impress me, and here's why. I don't care if they have 150,000 or 150. I only need two, but there have to be two good ones and two that I can get to and two that are current. So they can throw out those numbers all day long, and I don't even care if they're right or not. It may not matter to me if their system doesn't work right. I've always had better luck. This is just me. I've always had better luck working locally. Because, again, it's that whole fleet thing. The big fleets really tend to cover things up nationally. But I would give it a shot, like I said. Go apply as a driver and see what happens from that end. And if it's not that expensive, how much money are they talking about?
$350 for a month running 15 states.
Yeah,
that's 30 days.
Plus do you get access to all the applications? How does that work?
Well, what they do is they'll give you a list of people that meets what I'm looking for, and I can look at their, you know, resume and their work history, and then I can contact the ones out of the bunch that I want to contact.
Okay.
That's the way she explained it to me.
You know, I would try it, like I said, try it as a driver first, and then if it looks okay for $350, if I've got that many applications that I can go through, I might give it a shot.
Yeah, I thought it was probably worth it. I got one more question for you about a truck, if you've got time. Be quick.
Go ahead.
I found a 1999. It's a Century. Got 1.26 million miles. I just put a brand new 12.7 liter in it. It's got 139,000 miles on it. And the old truck, I stopped and looked at it, started it. The body's pretty straight, not any dents or anything. Paint job's not bad. It's pretty nice looking old truck for $10,000. And I just wondered if that was pretty close to the ballpark figure.
it's hard to go wrong. Is there a way to verify the engine work?
Got all the inland parts and equipment. I don't know if you've ever heard of them. They're out of Kansas City and Wichita and down in Oklahoma. They got all the paperwork on it, the miles on the truck,
yep,
and everything. They got all the maintenance records and everything. He said I could have it all. So
you can verify that that work's been done, I don't see how you can possibly go wrong for $10,000 when the engine's worth $15,000.
If you can just find a driver for it.
Well, that's true. that's always going to be the struggle in this industry. No question about that. But as far as the value of the truck, yeah, you can't really go wrong there. $10,000. I'm in the market for another one of those, by the way. But actually what I'm looking for right now is an 02 or an 03 Maverick. And I say I'm in the market, but I haven't even had 5 minutes to go look lately. But if somebody knows of where some of the pre-EGR Maverick trucks are, let me know. I have a feeling once I start looking, I'll find them. But if you know where one is looking, let me know. Let's go to Ohio. Sean, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, Kevin?
Doing good. What's on your mind tonight?
A couple questions. Real quick. I just wanted to get your opinion on the 780 Volvo and the 670 Volvo, and would you know the weight on it, and what motor would you recommend putting in those two trucks there? I know you probably only come with a Volvo motor or ISX Cummins, and wanted to get your opinion on that ISX Cummins motor. That's all.
What year are we talking about?
06, 07, both models, 670 or the 780.
You know, as far as weights and that kind of stuff, I really don't know. I don't keep up with that specifically. We'd have to just check that out and see. When it comes down to model comparisons like this, you know, the number one factor for me is aerodynamics, and both of these trucks are very aerodynamic. It's not going to matter. So what it comes down to after that is what you like specifically. You know, bump size, storage, you know, visibility, that kind of stuff. So really the way to pick it at this point is to spend some time in it, drive them around, pay close attention to things that would be important to you, and just pick the one you like.
Okay. All right. So what kind of motor? Like I say, either the Volvo motor or the ISX Cummins, and I haven't heard good things about either one, but I'm not sure, you know what I mean?
Neither, you know, the problem here is when we're talking about EGR, I can't really in good faith recommend any engine. I just haven't had, we get so many bad reports of nightmare maintenance issues, fuel mileage isn't great, and the other thing about these engines is they're not consistent. You know, one might do great. The fuel mileage is pretty good. It hasn't had any maintenance problems. And then the one right next to it will be the exact opposite. Can't get any fuel mileage out of it. We've been through four turbos and three EGR valves, and it still doesn't run right. There's no consistency with these engines, so it's very tough for me to recommend. If somebody put a gun to my head and said, you have to buy one of these trucks, I would probably take the ISX.
Okay. All right. Got you. Okay. All right. Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Now, that's not, you know, a glowing recommendation. If somebody put a gun to my head and made me decide, but if I have any way around it, any way, if there's anything I can do to stay away from an EGR engine, I'll do it. If that means building a glider, and I have the budget for that, that's what I'll do. If it means buying an older truck and reconditioning it, I'll do that. If I'm in that situation where I can't do either one of those, then I guess I'm going to have to look at it. But again, I'm going to do everything I can not to. Let's go to Colorado. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How's it going tonight?
Okay. Good.
I run a Freightliner with a 12.7 Series 60 in it. It's an EGR motor, and I I caught your show last night that was pre-recorded, and you had a guy called in and said, well, I figured out how to disconnect the EGR in a Series 60. What he figured out was how to disconnect a DDEC 4 because the DDEC 5 did not use a beep on the EGR. That's the big difference.
The DDEC 5 has one V-pod. The DDEC 4 has two.
Right. And the DDEC 5, what it does is it the V-pod drives the variable geometry turbo instead of driving the EGR. So, and if you go up and look at a DDEC 5, that's the big difference, I guess, between them is their sensors, because the sensor that he described on a DDEC 5 is a three-wire sensor. So,
okay.
You know, swing and a miss, I guess.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to look at one to see what he was really talking about, so I appreciate the feedback on that.
Yeah, well, so if you got a 2004 or a late 2003 Series 60 with the EGR on it, then what he was talking about might work, but it ain't going to work on a 2005 or later.
Got it. All right, we're back to the drawing board. You know, there's so many options. And this has turned out to be such a big project. And take a look at that. I mean, there aren't that many 12-7 EGR engines out there, and already we have two different variations just on the 12-7.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you're looking at the 14 liter, you've got what, four different versions, three or four?
Yeah, at least, yeah. And then, you know, you go to the other engines, and you've got multiple years and configurations. And then before we even get that figured out, all of a sudden you have to throw in DPFs on top of that.
Yeah,
it's a lot to keep up with. I'll tell you, every time I open the hood and I see that pre-EGR 12-7, boy, it makes me very happy.
Well, plus it's a lot easier to work on.
Yeah, they make sense to me. You know, I open the hood and I look at that engine and I go, wow, that's simple. There's just not that much to know.
Okay, well, thanks a lot. I'll let somebody else get on.
Thank you. I appreciate the feedback. Let's see. We are off to Texas this time. Hugh, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Kevin. 1099. If you're not impressed with the fare tax, just look at the impact that the new 1099 rules are going to have on you.
Hey, speaking of which, let me ask you a question before you jump in and with something else. We have been just absolutely covered up the last month, probably getting ready for the truck show, working on the RV, all the other stuff that we're doing. So much so that I haven't been keeping up with the news the way that I normally do. Is there anything, as far as the 1099 issue, is there any real push to get rid of that looks like it's got any legs?
I'm not sure about the real and the legs, but there are a few in Congress who are, you know, putting together a proposal to do away with that part of the health care bill. That isn't a health care bill, and it's hard to keep up.
Yeah.
The 1099, that isn't a health care bill, yeah. There, but I don't know. I don't really pay that close attention either. I just call you and feed you some one-liners and let you take it.
Okay. You know, normally...
but there have been some reports of some in Congress who are trying to do away with that part of the health care bill, but I don't know how serious it is or if it's got legs or not. Don't know.
Well, you know, all I can say then is just remember November. Let's send them such a strong message in November that maybe we can start to get some things fixed.
Yeah, a pretty strong message was sent in August or this summer with a few incumbent Republicans being defeated in the primaries. I don't care who it was or where it was, just the fact that we've been able to primary out some of these career politicians, to me, is great news. And that should be sending a signal to everybody in both parties.
Yeah, good.
Real quick, earlier you talked about rates. When you say year to year, you're just basically comparing the rates now as to what they were a year ago?
A year ago, yeah, and we would be looking at the entire month. And right now, August numbers aren't in yet. So when we do year over year, we're comparing July 2010 to July 2009.
And there's only about a 3% increase on your van freight, on contract van freight. Is that what you said earlier? I would have just thought it was a lot more than that. Huh. Okay.
Well, you know, here's what happens, and there's so much to learn about rates. You know, I'm still learning this. Were you listening? I'm sure you were, because I think I remember talking to you that night. The night that we had Rocco on from Landstar, and he was talking about the difference between retail minus discounts and cost plus discounts.
On the fuel?
Yeah.
Yes.
Retail minus, or retail prices in general, being very sticky. Retail prices don't like to move a lot. And wholesale prices are all over the board. They'll move, you know, big amounts in short period of time. A lot of times the same thing will happen. There's a real similarity between contract rates and spot market rates. Spot market rates will
be all over the place
quickly. Yeah, whereas contract, you know, those are negotiated. Everybody's trying to look long-term. Nobody likes to really make big movements in those. So you tend to see those. And, it's a double-edged sword. I mean, we would love most times as a business to know that we've locked in our business for a long period of time. We would like to know as a carrier, I'd love to say, well, I have a contract to move this freight for the next 12 months. That gives us a lot of stability. On the other hand, you know, if you would have locked in a 12-month contract in February of this year, you probably locked in at about
a low rate,
you know, 30 cents lower than what everybody else is getting to move it on the spot market right now.
Right. And if you don't have your own trucks, that makes it pretty tough on you.
Yeah. Yeah, it really does. So contract, it tends to be sticky. Those prices don't move as much or as far. And spot market tends to be much more volatile in price swings.
Okay. Real quickly, one more thing. The best paying loads that I've been hauling here lately have been all – you know, drop and hook, pre-loaded. But they actually, I just recently found out that I do have the option. I had my own trailer that I could still haul that freight. I would have to just get the trailer and then drop it early. But I generally do that anyway. So it could pay off for me to buy my own trailer at this point, as long as this account continues like it has. And I have no reason to believe that it wouldn't. I'm not going to say who it is. But anyway, once you said that that I could possibly save up to 1 mile to a gallon just with modifications to the trailer.
Yes.
Could you go over some of those? I mean, I know what some would be, but I don't see all of them I know about adding up to a dollar a gallon. I mean, a mile per gallon. Side skirts, wide singles. Beyond that, I mean, what would I have to do to actually get a mile per gallon improvement in fuel mileage just with the trailer?
Well, let's go over the whole thing. And these numbers, you know, it's surprising. With all the fuel mileage testing that we do have, that I can't find any hard numbers on this. So I'm estimating, based on what I am seeing as far as where the most aerodynamic drag is created. Let's just talk about aerodynamics first. More aerodynamic drag is created from
the rear of the trailer.
Of the Yeah, from the back of the cab, from where your sleeper extenders end to the back of the trailer. That's about 65% of all the aerodynamic problems occur from their back. So that tells me there's a huge opportunity for savings in there somewhere. When we talk about rolling resistance, we also know that the most critical position for rolling resistance are the trailer cams. So again, there must be a big opportunity for savings here. It hasn't been addressed the way that it has on the tractor. So this is just a guess and an estimation on my part, but here's what I would focus on. The first thing I would look at would be weight. I want a light trailer. I want a very smooth-sided trailer. Let's start there. Then as far as modifications, I would have a nose cone. I would have side skirts, and right now if I have to pick, they would be the Windines. I would have air tabs, and those would be my aerodynamic modifications, and that could make a huge difference.
Air tabs on tractor and trailer?
Absolutely.
Okay,
yep,
okay,
I address both problems.
You want air tabs on the tractor along with a nose cone on the trailer?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep, and then air tabs on the back of the trailer and side skirts. I would have Michelin XTAs with a rolling resistance of 73 back on the trailer. Mm. And I think that if we were to compare that trailer that I just described to some of the junk we pull around most of the time,
right,
we could be talking about somewhere, I think, minimum half mile per gallon and possibly up to as much as a mile per gallon.
And altogether, that's what, about $2,500 worth of modification? Well, the tires, if you order it with those tires, you probably actually save money, right?
Yeah.
Conventional duals, yeah.
Yeah, we have to have tires anyway, so that's not a big upcharge no matter how we do it. The other modifications, the Windines, I think they might be in the 5,000 range. I know for a side skirt, they're on the expensive side. But, you know, somebody brought me, at Dallas, somebody brought me a picture of a fuel mileage board from Mesilla Valley. They hold a competition there for fuel mileage. They've got, I'd have to go back and look at this, but their fleet average is above 8.
Right.
And I think that their winner was like 10-something, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Now, remember, they spec the tractors almost exactly what we do on a signature truck.
Right.
And then they also have control of that trailer. And they've been speccing their trailers for fuel mileage. And we're talking about some phenomenal numbers coming out of that company for fuel mileage. And they do it quietly. You know, and I actually read.
Yeah, they don't want their competition to know what they're doing.
that's absolutely right. There was some company that wanted to give an award for the most innovative fleet or something like that. I don't remember exactly what it was, and they turned it down. They said, "We don't want it. We don't want to have to tell everybody what we're doing. We'd just rather not have the award."
Right. We'd rather have the money that we're making.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Something came up with a previous caller, but now I don't remember what it was. So,
I'm going to have to move on anyway. I see there are a lot of calls to get to. Let's go to California. Dale, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call. I was going to wind you up on Scamma 88, but I think I'll jump in on the OIDA debate.
Okay,
you know,
Scamma 88.
Well, okay, we'll go back to that, but, you know, I don't think OIDA thought this thing through. If Swift buys 1,000 trucks, and maybe my math is wrong, they get $13 million. they turn around, that out of 1,000 trucks, they get roughly 100 trucks free.
Yeah, I thought about that.
How is that possibly going to jack rates up when their operating cost is that much less?
Wow.
And out of those 1,000 trucks, if they bought Freightliners, it's doing wonders for the Mexican economy. What's it doing for me?
Oh, boy. You bring in a whole new angle, two angles I hadn't even thought about. See,
who's the lion's share of company trucks. I mean, it's Freightliner.
Well, you're right. Absolutely. It's not even close. Maybe International started to sneak up on them this year. There were a lot of ProStars being ordered. But still, you're right. That is a huge boon to the Mexican economy. Unbelievable. I hadn't thought about that angle. Two things. One, where those trucks are going to be manufactured, where the money's going, which is a whole nother issue. But you're right. This has something to do with that. And the fact that from a big carrier's point of view, 100 free trucks for every 1,000 trucks that we buy, we can flood the market with trucks again.
You know, and I imagine J.B. Hunt and Schneider and Swift and England and shall I continue? I mean, they don't buy two trucks at a time.
No, and they have to buy these trucks anyway. It's not like they can say, oh, if we don't get the credit, we're not going to buy trucks. That's not an option. They have to buy them.
Yeah. I don't think this was really thought through, but...
Well, you know what's interesting is I expected, especially since I talked about it on a weekend show and it's Wednesday already, I expected a big backlash on this. You know, I expected to hear somebody somewhere complaining about the fact that I was bringing this up and talking about it and not playing nice. I haven't heard a thing.
No, and I think if people think this through, I mean, we are giving the major carriers a huge advantage that we're never going to get.
Never. Nope.
Go ahead.
When I read it, I just sat there and thought, am I reading this right? What am I missing? So I thought I'd throw it out to let other people maybe point out the flaws in my thinking. But instead of pointing out the flaws in my thinking and why I may have been wrong about this, people like you keep bringing up issues I didn't even think of. But they're all reasons why OIDA shouldn't have been backing this.
Yeah, I mean, that's, all they're doing is killing the little guy and giving the major carrier, which, you know, the big bad major carrier, a huge competitive advantage over us.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Now if we can, do you want to talk about Scam 88 or?
Yeah, let's go.
You know, have you listened to their spokesman?
I have not. I don't think I've heard a single commercial.
Oh.
I just, some people have asked me about it, and then I went and looked it up, and when I saw the website, I was almost embarrassed for them that they would try to market to the trucking industry given the limited information they had about diesel engines.
Well, they, where were they when fuel was at $4.50 a gallon was my first question, but when you listen to their spokesman, he went, you know, his mileage was 6.2 to 6.9 was his average. Well, the guy's all over the board, so he really doesn't know what his average is. And he went from the 6.2 to 6.9 to now his average is 7.2 to 7.9. Well, track your numbers.
Well, and I need to address this more often because I would like to stop doing what we all seem to do. And for a while I was getting on people about it, and then I kind of stopped. But 6.2 to 6.9 can never be defined as an average.
Nope.
We have to stop saying, my average is this to this. That's not an average. By definition, an average is one number, not a range. You're giving me a range. Range is important. I want to know range. but let's stop calling range average. What I'd like to know from people when they tell me about their fuel economy is my 30-day average or my lifetime average or whatever period you want to give me, my average is 6.73. My range is 5.97 to 7.34. Now, I know a lot about their fuel economy. Somebody says my average is 6.2 to 6.9. No, it's not.
Yeah, these, you know, this is all over the board. And like I say, if it's, you know, if it's that great a product, where was it at $4.50 a gallon when we really needed everything we could get?
Well, here's what I think. And you know that this is smart on their part. I've seen it before. These products will come and go. And what they will do is they'll bring out a product which I think has an outrageously high price for what it is. It's a gallon of some liquid, and who knows what's in there. There might be $4 worth of product in that gallon. We don't know. But
that's really good liquid because you can burn it in your fuel as well as put it in your engine oil. Like, how does that work?
Well, that's the thing that worries me the most, because if we can burn it, it must be solvent-like. And if it will burn and we're putting it in the oil, that is a very, very bad thing. So this worries me, not only in the fact that it's taking $115 a gallon out of somebody's pocket, but could it be potentially doing harm to the engine? And I don't know. If we put it in the oil, I think absolutely we're probably doing harm. If we burn it, probably not. There's not that much you can dump into your tank that'll actually do damage to the system, but I guess it's possible. But here's what I think happens. $115 a gallon, their markup is astronomical, their profit margin is outrageous, and what they do is they take a bunch of money, they throw it at every place they can throw it, they get people buying this stuff, and my guess is a year from now we won't even hear about this stuff anymore.
Hey, but you get a free measuring funnel for that $115 a gallon.
Hey, there you go. There you go.
Have a great night. I'll let somebody else in.
All right. Thanks. I appreciate it. Let's see. Let's go to Mike in Tennessee. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. What was he just talking about? Was he just talking about that motor coat? I think that's the name of it. About your last caller was.
No, this one is called Gamma 88.
Have you ever heard of that motor coat?
I have. You know, all of these products to me are very, very similar. They're very high priced. They make wild claims. They blanket the market with a bunch of advertising, and most of the stuff, in my opinion, is just garbage.
And that one too. Stay away from it.
I stay away from anything. Anything that makes those kind of wild claims, cost more than $100 a gallon, and they tell me I can dump it in everything and anything, there's no way it's going in my engine.
All right, good. I stayed away from it then. That's one good thing. I see the price. I said, wow, $90. It probably has to do something good. Maybe for them, not for me.
See, that's what I think their philosophy is. They think if they put this really high price on it and make wild claims, you start to believe, wow, that stuff must be fantastic. And then you hear it all over the place. And then you hear all these testimonials. And their marketing strategy works. I'll give them that. They're really good at marketing. I just don't think the products are worth anything. And I think sometimes they can be dangerous.
All right. A couple years ago, I called your show, and I asked about my own authority. And when I asked you, you stopped me in my tracks. You asked me my cost per mile. At the time, I just got my truck, so I didn't know. And then you said, do you have any shippers and whatnot? And I did. I did at the time. And I went with Lance. Well, what you said after that was, you won't make any money then. So I went with Landstar. Happy with them. My fiance got her license. We drive teams. What I'm wondering is, I'm happy with Lance, happy as can be, and I do have a couple friends. One of them just got out of his own authority, and one of them is living a nightmare. So yeah, what I'm wondering is, go ahead.
It's a tough way to go. It's hard.
I with us running teams, we make a pretty good, penny. And that is, giving Landstar this 65%, we get the fuel surcharge and so on. We don't move our truck for under $2, just a rule that we made, and we just don't do it. And
good.
Everything's going, yes, $2 and $2,000 a trip. Anything under that, okay, than that, I'm not interested. I'll sit the truck, unless I go for a day, which, we get work. We get work every day. So it does come to us, I guess, being a team. If they need to move, they're going to pay what we want to make. So it doesn't work. Unless I'm going home. I live in New York. So on the way home, I will take a little bit less. Actually, I never need to take less going to New York. But if I need to, I will. Like the length of the haul, like if I'm in Ohio and a haul comes up to New York, I'll take it. It gets me home. So I did have very little.
Right.
We stay out on an average of 3 weeks. And we make anywhere between take-home. On the low, low, low end, like maybe the first week we go out, which might be 3 or 4 days, we might take home $3,000.
Okay.
That's not gross. That's, to us. Gross, about $5,000. We started running the board about 2 weeks ago. We were running for FedEx. We had an agent that was running for FedEx. And we were doing pretty good. She lost one of the bids that got us out to the Midwest. And so we started running the board, and that's when we made that rule up. We all run for under $2 a mile, which worked out fine. Our first week out, we made $11,000 gross in 5 days. Now, I'm making money hand over foot. We're running one truck, not my own authority, and I'm happy. So what I'm curious about is, 3 years ago, you told me you won't make any money, unless you have a shipper. Now, I worked for Estes before I got my own truck and worked for Landstar. I took home about $800 which I thought was great money. Before that, I had a straight truck. I took home about $600, which was great money compared to the factory I was working at. Got my own truck, was a single driver, started taking home $2,000. I thought that was great money. Mind you, I dropped out of school in 10th grade. Got my fiance in the truck. We take home $3,000, $4,000. $5,000, right up to $6,000 a week, one truck, and we're doing okay. Like I said, that one day, 5 days was a great, we got really lucky. 5 days, $11,000, we took home, quite a bit of money. I do listen to you about the idling the truck. We try not to idle the truck. We will stay in a hotel. We got that from you. Actually, my fiance listens to everything you say, and she's like, Kevin will stay in a hotel. Kevin will stay in a hotel if he has to stop for 10 hours, so let's get a hotel. Her being a woman, she don't want to stay in the truck for 10 hours, so we get a hotel, which obviously we do save money getting a hotel if we ever have to sit 20 hours or so. But what I'm wondering is, like I said, when I was working for SC, I made $800, $900 take home. To me, that was a lot of money. Making $2,000 a week, that's a lot of money. Making $3,000 a week as a team is a lot of money. Going on the $4,000 and $5,000 a week averages that we take home, that's right, a lot of money. But how much money are you talking about when you said, I won't make any money?
And you were specifically asking me about having your own authority. And what I've seen is people get their own authority, work their ass off, take a lot more risk, and end up taking home half of the kind of numbers you're talking about. And that's why I am very, very careful when somebody wants to get their own authority. I don't always want to sound like I'm talking everybody out of it, because for some people it is the next logical step in the progression. But 99% of the people make that step before they're ready to make that step. I mean, ultimately, if our desire is to own a trucking company, then we need to move on to that step, but we have to be ready for it. Most people just aren't, and that's why I spend time trying to talk people out of it. And speaking of out of it, we are out of time. I want to thank everybody for joining me. Be sure to tune in again here tomorrow night. We'll do this all over. If I didn't get to your call, I apologize. We'll try again tomorrow night. Be safe, be profitable, and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford.